Welcome to WISO Weekend, WISO's weekly radio magazine. I'm Jerry Kenny. Very pleased to be with you this Sunday morning. Once again, we've got a lot coming your way on today's program. Later in the show, we've got WISO's occasional art series, Culture Couch, and we'll also learn a little bit about finding the silence in a noisy world. That's in our interview with the Heartfulness Center in Beaver Creek. Up first, in this installment of Bulletin Board Diaries, I follow a lead found on a business card at a cafe to Cedarville University. That's where I met a man who found a creative way to battle his own depression through music. Cedarville resident Andy McFarlane is 28 years old. His business card states that he's a composer, arranger, and private music instructor. I meet Andy inside a large music room in the Dixon Ministry Center on the Cedarville University campus. Andy graduated from the Christian University in 2015 with a degree in music. Right now, it's his job as a custodian that's paying the bills, but Andy gets extra cash from music tutoring on the side. He says his love for music began with one song.
My brother Kenny came in and showed me the chords to The Scientist by Coldplay. I remember just playing those over and over and over again, and my mom would get so annoyed with it.
Andy says his mom was actually very supportive when it came to teaching music to all five of her children. And looking back, he says punching out those chords to The Scientist laid the foundation for everything he's done musically since then.
Because I've played those chords over and over again and listened to all of the stuff, I actually was developing skills that I didn't even know I was developing. Which are being able to hear how different notes move to each other and how different chords move to each other, which is what music theory is all about.
During our conversation, McFarlane opens up about how music has helped him through some tough times.
My thorn, I guess, is my depression. I ended up starting to take medication for it, antidepressants for it. That's one way of doing something about it. But other ways are to set your mind on things that are good, you know, that are healthy for you. There's a good Christian hymn that was actually taken from Sibelius called Be Still My Soul. When you hear that right here, these first two lines, it's four notes and it just stays there. It doesn't really go anywhere. And that's kind of what depression is, you know, like there's a cyclical pattern of life where you're just, you get up and you hate getting up. So you want to stay in bed. So you go back to bed after a little bit. That's a lot of sleep. But unless you mean to break that habit, it's not going to be broken. You know, you have to find the strength from somewhere to get up and kick your butt into gear, you know. And then the third instance. Leave to thy God to order and provide. It ends up kind of saying, okay, I'm going to be okay. The song is Be Still My Soul. So he's pleading to his soul to be still. And in the end, he's able to kind of overcome whatever mood he's in. So that was a hymn that I was playing over and over again during this time of being depressed and moody. And when you listen to this melody line, it has the same type of feel. This piece right here, Envies of the Simple Mind, I wrote when I was very depressed in the summer of 2015. The piece that I wrote as my junior project and also as the core of my senior recital is a 25-minute piece. It was like five times larger than anything I had written before. I had a lot of mood swings, but it mainly was just from very dark and very depressed to okay, you know. I ended up writing, I think, this full movement
basically during the summer. And it is a good movement. And I think the fact that I was able to accomplish this was kind of I attribute that to the music itself. Like, so yes, the music does help with feeling accomplished and feeling like you have something to go to be able to work through your pain. For me, it is a type of worship. Sound is incredible, music is incredible, and diving into it, just like diving into water, and by enjoying it, you're enjoying the creation of a higher being.
For now, Andy McFarland is looking forward to grad school, where he'll continue his studies in music. He continues tutoring and can be found jamming at local venues with his bandmates in the Wild Note Jazz Quartet. They have performances scheduled for July 7th at Old Schoolhouse Winery in Eaton, 6:30 p.m. For Bulletin Board Diaries, I'm Jerry Kenney. This is WISO Weekend on WYSO. Dayton History's Rail Fest returns to Carillon Historical Park June 23rd and 24th. The two-day event is billed as a family fun event. It'll feature miniature train rides, live steam engines, model train displays, train merchandise, and other attractions. In this interview, David Orzy, festival co-chair, says railways, as with many cities across the country, were important to the development of the Miami Valley.
Well, it really got started about 13 years ago by Ron Mock, who was the president at the time of the Carillon Park Rail and Steam Society, which runs the 7.5-inch gauge train back in the northern part of the park. Sort of his idea. About 3 years into it, he needed some help and sort of twisted my arm, and because I'd known him for a number of years, and then that's when I got involved. And unfortunately, he did pass away a few years ago. And since then, his son, Joe Mock, is one of the co-chairmen as well, and also Alex Heckman here at the Carillon. So all three of us really jointly run the show.
And I understand you had around 7,000 visitors over the two-day event last year.
Yeah, we were pretty fortunate, a little over 7,000, and a lot of it depends on the weather. We just had just stunning weather last year, and of course we're hoping to have good weather this year.
What's the setup like?
Well, first of all, back in the, again, the north corner is the Carillon Park Rail and Steam Society, and that's sort of the big draw where kids, anybody really, adults and kids can ride the train. You sit on top of the train, you sort of straddle it, sort of like a bicycle. That group's been there for really over 20 years. And then we also have vendors, sales vendors, and a large circus tent and other places spread out around the park, and they, you know, they sell items, train-related items, and some of them come pretty far. They've come in the past and enjoyed being here and done pretty well. We seem to draw a lot of what we call rail fans or people that attend those kind of events. And then we also have a number of, like, layouts, model railroad layouts. There's a couple strung in various buildings, and then we have two garden railroads that are set up outside.
So as with many cities across the U.S., the rail system was pretty important to the city's development. Can you talk about that aspect of the Miami Valley?
Yes, Dayton at one time had lots of trains. In fact, we still do. Of course, passenger service has ended, unfortunately, in 1979, but there's still lots of freight trains that run through Dayton. Yeah. Unfortunately, since a lot of the industry has left, there isn't a lot of local industry that requires rail service, but fortunately, there's still others around the country that do, and thus Dayton actually sees probably 40 trains, freight trains a day through town, which most people don't even realize.
I believe you're a bit of a train aficionado. Can you tell me how you got involved and where the interest began?
Well, my wife calls it a genetic defect, so I think it's had an interest in railroads ever since I've been a little kid. Sort of started out in model railroading like a lot of people do, but in the late 60s, I sort of got into the photography end of it and the collecting of photographs and doing historical research. And over the years, we've traveled most of the country photographing trains and acquiring collections, unfortunately, from a few of my friends that have passed on. And so now I've got over a million photographs. Now, of those million, probably the majority or at least a third to half are taken within, 100-mile radius of Dayton. So there's a strong coverage, of this area. a lot of them go back to the 60s, 50s, and some 40s, and there are some, you know, go back into the early part of the century, but those are pretty hard to find.
So it's not a strange thing that you're involved with a project like RailFest here at Caroline.
No, I guess that's how I knew Ron Mock back in the, you know, from the 60s, really, and he knew I had a strong interest, and he and I both thought that that interest tied pretty good with Caroline Park here, and actually hoping that all of them actually end up here someday.
We're speaking with Dave Orzy with Caroline Park, and we've been talking about Caroline Park Rail Festival, Saturday, June 23rd, and Sunday, June 24th. Dave, where can people find out information about the festival?
Well, the easiest place is on the website, DaytonHistory.org. And actually, the Caroline Park Rail and Steam Society also has a website, and it's on there, too.
Great. Dave, thanks for speaking with us.
Thank you.
I'm Jerry Kenney. You're listening to WISO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO. Theater begins with an empty stage. The set builder arrives and begins to hammer together a world. Then the costume designer steps in and the actors find their places. Culture Couch takes you backstage this summer to meet some local makers of stagecraft. During his life, William Shakespeare wrote 37 plays, and as the final production of their 2018 season, the Human Race Theater in Dayton is tackling all of them in just over an hour and a half. The complete works of William Shakespeare Abridged is a comedy that's part improv and part audience participation. Community Voices producer George Drake Jr. took a look behind the curtains to see how the set for the show came to life.
If you know anything about theater, you know that a lot of the magic happens backstage.
So this is our scene shop back here. It's where we build pretty much every component of a set that comes through here.
That's technical director Adam Kroll, and he admits the set for the show doesn't really look like much. It's just a few shelves filled with the paint cans from their own paint area in their shop. There's paint splattered all over the stage. Generally, it kind of looks like a mess. But that's intentional. Every element is envisioned, planned, and executed. Unlike other shows, for the complete works of William Shakespeare Abridged, the dialogue, acting, and props do most of the work. The set for this show almost acts as a canvas, rather than its own element, in a sense.
A lot of it is pretty empty, which gives a lot of playing, a lot of room for action, a lot of room for the actors to take a lot of liberties from their end and the director to take a lot of liberties from his end.
Adam knows the set inside and out, better than anyone, maybe. While he built it, he didn't actually design it. That's the job of the scenic director, Eric Barker.
As a scenic designer, it's my job to help tell the story. It's not about scenery, unfortunately. I would love to say, hey, it's all about the scenery.
When it comes to designing a set, there are a few parameters he had to consider. Labor, space, and the two biggest of all, time and budget. Two things Eric ran into when he made his initial set design for the complete works.
But then you have to sit down and say, okay, this is a little too ambitious. What can I do as a designer to pare this down and still be able to tell the story?
So they had to get creative. First thing to do, instead of making new set pieces, look into their stock and recycle what's already been built.
It's really about working with the company here and saying, okay, so what do we have available? What do you have? And they had just finished a show that had all these great shelves. And I said, well, let's use those and let's make them look like they're old and put a lot of paint on them. And what else you got? So it was really kind of like, you give me your laundry list, your inventory, and we will make all those elements work on that set.
Eric and I were sitting next to a tall display case in the lobby of the Loft Theater, full of two scale models of past Human Race Theater production sets, when I noticed that he kept referring to his design as the set, or our set, but never my set. For him, it's all about the collaboration. While the product he's putting together came out of his head and it's his design, he doesn't see it that way.
It technically is my design, but I'm designing it for the show. I'm designing it for the director. I'm designing it for the company. Those models are done to help represent what the final set will look like. Well, it helps the lighting designer because, I mean, it's a piece of art. I mean, ultimately what's going on the stage is my art for us.
Once the run of the complete works is done, it's time for Adam, the technical director, to get back to work. He and his team will paint over the stage, break down the set pieces, put things like the shelves and anything else they can reuse in storage, and the rest is trash.
So that's one of the fun things of theater, is that you build it and then you tear it down and you take it off to the dump and then you're done and you end up building a new one.
The Human Race Theater's production of the complete works of William Shakespeare Abridged is at the Loft Theater in Dayton through June 17th. For Culture Couch on WYSO, I'm George Drake Jr.
Culture Couch is made possible by a generous grant from the Ohio Arts Council. Wright-Patterson Air Force Base is holding their second annual Pollinator Expo on June 20th. The event promises more than 30 informational tables from various organizations from across the state that will highlight the work they're doing to help improve the pollinator population. To get details on the event, I spoke with Danielle Trevino. She's an environmental protection specialist with Wright-Patt's Civil Engineering Division, and Ryan Qualls, acting chief of interpretation at the Dayton Aviation Heritage National Historical Park. First, Trevino tells us why expos like this are so important.
One in every three bites of food we eat is courtesy of an insect pollinator, and pollinator populations are on the decline throughout the country. So here on base, we wanted to do our part to sustain pollinators and to help teach folks why pollinators are important and what everybody can do to help.
Tell me about the response to last year's event.
We had several hundred people come out, and everybody was really enthusiastic about it.
So this year, you expect larger crowds, hopefully. Tell me a little bit about what will take place at the expo.
At the expo, we'll have a couple of food trucks for people that are hungry. We have four guest speakers. We have face painting. Kids will be able to make a bee house with the National Park Service. We have installed two monarch way stations on base, and those are habitats for the monarch butterfly. And this year's expo is actually highlighting the monarch butterfly. Just like bees, monarchs are important pollinator species, and due to habitat loss, they're facing declines also, just like bees. We're going to have a documentary playing at the top of every hour that highlights monarch butterflies as well.
I think that's going to be a big draw for people.
I think so, too. I hope, you know, everybody likes butterflies, and people need to realize that it's not just bees or just honeybees. It's really all pollinator populations, and that includes bats, butterflies, moths, etc.
I think pollinators, to the average person, pollinators appear to play a small place in your life. You don't really think about what bats are doing. You don't think about what bees are doing, but it impacts us on a daily basis. And the small things that we can do to help pollinators in our community, to help create more habitat, more food source, just allows them to rebound from other problems. Not all of the issues that pollinators experience are caused by humans, but when you add together those different factors, it's really affecting, you know, hive collapse through mites and lack of nutrition, lack of natural areas and plants that pollinators look for. And so many of the organizations that are coming out on the 20th, their focus is educating the public, sharing with the public how they can go about making changes, you know, just if it's in your own yard or just in the way that you shop, just get people thinking about this issue before it becomes such a large problem that there isn't a solution.
You mentioned Huffman Prairie, which is a beautiful historic place here in the Miami Valley. So it's quite fitting that this Pollinator Expo would take place on the site.
Yeah, it is. And when when the Wright brothers were here in 1904 and 05, the area is primarily tenant farms and dairy pastures. You know, was not really heavily residential. There were farmhouses in the area, but in their notes, they talked about, you know, having to work around some of the issues with using the field. And today, it looks very similar to the way it did in 1904, save it's a drier environment than it was. But the Wright brothers were able to conduct experiments that led to an understanding of three axes of control, roll, pitch, and yaw, at the field. It was the first place an airplane ever made a complete turn in the air, a figure eight, and it was the only place where the Wright brothers ever flew together in the same plane. They'd actually promised their dad that they would fly separately so one of them would survive. It's a unique environment, and I definitely recommend anyone in the area go and explore it, because we don't have a lot of prairie remnants today. And it really speaks to the cultural resource mission the U.S. Air Force has taken to really help tell that story, talk about the Wright brothers, preserve the sites, and make them available for the public.
Can you talk about preservation efforts at the prairie and what takes place on an annual basis?
One of the biggest efforts that went into preserving it was just restoring it to the way it looked. And then also looking towards the future, what would you want the prairie to look like in 100 years? Would we want it to be a, you know, huge monument to the Wright brothers, or do we want to see the environment as it was when they were there so you can develop that same sense of place as the Wrights had? You know, on a rainy day, they're standing inside their hangar. waiting for that weather to clear. And you can do that same thing today. You can go and explore those places. I can't really speak too far into what the Air Force has put in to developing it, but it really, because the environment is in a floodplain behind the Huffman Dam, it really didn't have a lot of development done to it because you can't really build structures out there. There are waysides that kind of tell the story of the Wrights' work. The Natural Prairie has a one-mile hiking path with some waysides and trailheads. And then we also have a replica of the Wrights' 1905 hangar and the hangar they stored the plane in, and also the catapult system they launched with.
Ryan, thanks. And Danielle, let me ask you about the logistics of putting this event together. I understand you have a number of organizations who have joined together in this effort.
Yes, we have over 30 informational tables from various organizations ranging from parks to colleges across the state, and they'll be in attendance highlighting their efforts and offering guidance on how to help improve pollinator populations.
Great. So how can folks find out the details on the event and how they can participate?
So if people are interested in attending the event, it'll happen at the Wright Memorial and Huffman Prairie Flying Field Interpretive Center at 2380 Memorial Road. That's just off of Kaufman, the intersection of Kaufman and 444. The event is from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. that day. And to find more information about the event, you can go online to Facebook to either the National Dayton Aviation Heritage page, the National Park page, or go on to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base and they have an event. You can also call 937-425-0008 for information or for directions that day.
Last year, Wright-Patterson Air Force Base became the first B-City USA affiliate in the Department of Defense, and we're very proud of that. And other installations throughout the country have reached out to us since then to find out how they can do that.
One of the things that I think is important about having this expo here and the work that Wright-Patterson has done to preserve the sites and to create events like this for the public is that it helps us to kind of carry on the sentiment the Wright brothers had. They weren't successful because they went out and did it one time. It was through persistence and application that they found success and overcame problems in flight. And likewise, with some of this information, we can arm the public with the ability to help in preserving pollinator habitats and improving their lot in life to actually make it so this isn't a problem for the next generation. So it's a perfect place, you know, to talk about things that are flying, to talk about changes that we want to make. The Wright brothers believed that anything was possible, and they really lived with this idea of limitless possibility. And we really want to help keep that feeling alive in Dayton and get people excited about what they can do to help pollinators in their community.
We've been speaking with Danielle and Ryan about the Wright-Patterson Air Force Base Pollinator Expo. Again, that takes place Wednesday, June 20th at Wright Brothers Memorial. That's 2380 Memorial Road, and the event kicks off at 11 a.m. That runs to 3 p.m. Ryan and Danielle, thanks so much for speaking with us.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Danielle Trevino with Wright-Patterson Air Force Base and Ryan Qualls with the Dayton Aviation Heritage National Park. I'm Jerry Kenney. This is WISO Weekend on WISO. Well, in today's world of social media overload, the 24-hour news cycle, and high-tension politics, it can be difficult for individuals to maintain a sense of self or to hear their own inner voices among the noise, to remain self-aware in the face of today's intersectional culture. Uma Mullapadi is the Regional Administrator for Heartfulness, an international network of wellness and meditation centers. To find out more about the organization, I paid a visit to the Heartfulness Center in Beaver Creek, where Mullapudi talks about the heartfulness tradition, cleansing the mind, and she offers some details on an upcoming book launch. Her talk is a meditation in itself.
The goal of Heartfulness Institute is to provide our community with tools to manage stress so they can do it themselves, if they can able to tap into their own inner silence and restore the balance. So even Harvard research proved that there is three things that can trigger the happiness in the human brain is exercise, meditation, and prayer. This is scientific research done. So that is basically taking care of our body, our mind, and spirit. But even to take care of our body, we are not even able to sleep in our most top-notch beds because our mind is so disturbed. So unless you really maintain the mind, you cannot really take care of the body. Our will doesn't work. We know we are supposed to eat right. We're supposed to exercise. We know what we are supposed to do, but we are not able to do because our mind is not at our own command. When it comes to the spirit part of it and the prayer part of it, we all have different religious beliefs, different spiritual beliefs, different belief systems. But even in our most sacred places, we are not able to tap into the silence and be in a real state of prayer because our mind is disturbed. You know, even in our sacred places, our mind is going husband, wife, children, problem, anger, hatred. This person said that, that person said that. So even to take care of your spirit and tap into the silence, you need to maintain the mind. So our cars need maintenance, houses need maintenance, body needs maintenance, our mind needs maintenance. And a lot of times people stay away from meditation thinking it has to do with something with religious belief. It has nothing to do with anybody's religious belief. You have a mind, you maintain your mind. And so what is meditation is reprogramming the mind that's got into a habit of thinking different things. So you bring the mind into the heart's positive energy field. You know, heart has a very positive energy magnetic field. If we simply train ourselves, take 20 minutes in a given day and bring the mind into the heart's field and allow it to simply rest in the mind, rest the mind in the heart's field, our mind gets rejuvenated. But the thing is, everybody struggles with thoughts. See, thoughts are just like dirt of the mind, like how your body, you go into the world, you live in the world, you accumulate dirt. That's why we shower. Same way when we are living in this world, using this mind, performing action, we are accumulating negative vibration and it's entering into our heart's field. That's why when you get angry, your heart is heavy. You're sad, your heart is heavy. You're happy, your heart is light. So this negative energy is entering into your heart's field and that is flowing from your heart's field into your mind and making your mind disturbed. That's why we are depressed. Even the most known celebrities, with everything that they have, if they're committing suicide, why? Because they're collecting negative vibration from the world that they're living in, and they're not doing anything to release. If you don't take a shower for 10 days, what's the status? That is the state of our heart's field and our mind being affected by that heart's field. So a lot of times people try to force themselves, oh, I think positive, or think positive. It's not really forcing yourself to think positive. It's whatever you collect. It's flowing from your heart's field into the mind's field and making, forcing you to think like that. So if you take time, come into the heart and allow this negative vibration to leave your field using your own thought power, because mind is like a knife. You can cut an apple or you can cut a throat. It's how you use it. We've been using this mind, going into the world, performing action, achieving success. But in the process, we're also collecting negative vibration that's affecting us. So if we say, simply use that mind, come into the hearts and release this with our own thought power, release the negative vibration, tap into the silence field and restore our balance, we really will be able to live a life in a spirit of joy and celebration, which is what we're supposed to be doing. But everything is affecting us. So in meditation, basically, that is what you do, and thoughts are just leaving the field. Thoughts are like your children. They're never going to go away. They're a part of your mind. So what do you do during meditation is just ignore the thoughts. So basically, meditation is watching your favorite show. When I'm watching Big Bang Theory, my mom calls, my husband calls, my child calls. I can hear them, but I'm not hearing them. I'm absorbed in Sheldon because I love Sheldon. Same way, if we love ourselves, allow ourselves to rest in the heart and ignore the thoughts, even if we are able to tap into that field for one moment, we will be able to restore the balance and feel rested and rejuvenated. So that is what the goal of the organization is. And the teachers of the organization developed a technique where the trainers are empowered to tap into a positive vibratory field. Nature has resources for us. The resources are within our own heart. So they developed a technique. Those techniques are we offer to people. So we are empowering individuals so they can restore their own balance and live balanced life. So we, with that good intention, we offer this free of charge everywhere. In the Miami Valley area, we offer these classes at Miami Valley Hospital, several locations, Kettering Cancer Care, Kettering Hospital. We offered it sometime in Soyan, and we are restarting at the Soyan. We offer at 7 county, Montgomery County offices. We offer them for UD staff and students. We offer it at Wright State University. We offer it at Yellow Springs House of Home Yoga Studio, Emerson Technologies, and of course in Dayton International Peace Museum. So we are in several places that I probably can't even remember. What all we do is we take a half an hour time. The first session we offer them an hour where we give them introduction to meditation. How do you meditate? How do you relax your body? Where do you bring your focus into? And then the trainers will guide them into the calmness. And it's very well received because after, even though in the beginning people are like disturbed, by the end of that half an hour session, they tap into that calmness and they are able to perform better. They're able to live calmly. And the most impressive thing that I heard the leader of the organization, Mr. Kamlesh Patel, say once to the young students, he said that if one atom blasts, the surrounding atoms also blast. that is atomic explosion by Einstein. If one person meditates in the house, the calmness is felt by entire family. Like if you're angry, it affects your entire family. If you're calm, it affects your entire family. Same way in an area, if 100 people are meditating, 5 miles radius, there won't be any negativity. You know, it's like in a dark room, you'll put a candle, there is light. You put 1,000 candles, there is illumination. So with each one of us meditating, making that a part of our life, like how exercise is a part of your life, meditation becomes a part of our life, we not only help ourselves, we help our communities. That is how individual peace will lead to world peace. That is how through meditation you find peace and you spread peace. So that is what the goal of the organization. And with that intention, what they did was they wrote a book, the leader and co-author Joshua Pollack, Mr. Kamlesh Patel and Joshua Pollack, they wrote a book called Heartfulness Way, where they want to demystify the negative thoughts about meditation and give them the clarity that it is, you take charge of your life. You know, you take 20 minutes for yourself. Come into the heart, allow your mind to rest. And as this negative vibration releases from your system, with your own thought power, you are able to manifest things, positive things into your life. This book is number one on Amazon in India. And here also it's become very prominent in Barnes & Noble. In the nonfiction religious side, it became number one. And in the regular one, in Barnes & Noble and Amazon, it became number two. And it's in the top 100. So the co-author, Joshua Pollack, is making a tour here in the U.S. And it's been successfully received everywhere. In Dayton, we have the tour on June 24th, Sunday, at 10 a.m. at this Lance Road facility. And from 10 to 1. And Rick Perles, the state representative, is coming. And we've invited Beaver Creek Mayor Bob Stone. And we're also inviting Deborah Lieberman from the Montgomery County. And Dr. Dharmesh Gandhi, who is the president of American Asian Physicians of India. And several dignitaries, all the wellness coordinators from every organization that we offer these meditation classes are going to be here. We're expecting about 150 to 200 people to participate in this. And it's going to be a good event where the author is going to release the book, speak about the book, and we will get to meditate with the author. And we have refreshments on that day. And also we have another event on 25th Monday from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Peace Museum, where we are trying to cover the downtown area. So it's a good organization with a noble intention of serving our communities. And we offer these classes at the Beaver Creek School for the teachers. We offer classes through the Beaver Creek City Parks. And in our classes, we have like a 5-week class where we, first day, we give them the introduction to the Heartfulness Institute. Then we give them techniques to meditate correctly at home, techniques to release stress out of your system, techniques that you can use during the day to maintain your balance, and how would you develop the attitude of cheerful acceptance, which should lead to inner poise. Thereby, we live life in a spirit of joy. So it's we cover several aspects. It's all volunteer-based. We have about 21 trainers that serve in this community, and anybody that's willing, we ask them to become a trainer and serve. And we have a location in the Fairfield Commons Mall. We opened one, and when the leader of the organization, Mr. Patel, said, open one, I thought, this guy is crazy. But when I actually opened the mall meditation center, the second day, one old lady walked in, and she's a nurse, and she was so skeptical. You know, she was holding on to her purse, and I did the relaxation, and I guided her into meditation. After half an hour, she opened her eyes, and she has tears. She said, I never felt so much peace in my life. You know, so then I realized what his vision was. He wants to reach to common people. In a mall, you walk in. If this is a 7-acre property, people are skeptical to know what it is. But whereas it's in a mall, people walk in, find out, and they will benefit from it. So we are very proud of the organization, and we are very happy we're able to serve.
Uma Mullapudi with the Heartfulness Center in Beaver Creek. You can find out more information at DaytonHeartfulness.org. I'm Jerry Kenny. That's it for this edition of WISO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO, giving voice to our community, our nation, and our world. Thanks for joining us this Sunday morning. Coming up next on WISO, it's Vic McGunis with the Book Nook.